Each of us wants to live a life that's full of meaning, a life that makes the most of our time, our gifts, our energy. We want to live worthy lives. Paul's letter to the early church in Colossae tells us we are capable of pleasing God in every way. We have the potential to grow in knowledge and strength. We have the capacity to bear fruit in the work we do. Endurance, patience, gratitude, and joy are all offered to us. But how do we lay claim to these good things in a complicated world? Each Sunday at South Main Baptist Church, we'll explore the densely beautiful New Testament book of Colossians, which provides reliable and durable instructions for building and living a worthy life. Listen, here's the blueprint.
This is a story called How I Almost Got Into a Fight with 11-time All-Star Major League Pitcher Roger Clemens. Roger and his wife, Debbie, lived in a beautiful new house in the Memorial area, but its roof leaked in 4 or 5 places. And when they filed a lawsuit, I was asked to defend the home builder as their lawyer. I took Roger's testimony, took his deposition, took Debbie's testimony, as well as a number of roofing experts, and then with their lawyer, we scheduled a mediation. A mediation is where you try to settle the case short of trial, and in mediation, there's typically a brief opening session during which both sides tell their respective positions in the case, and then the two parties break apart into separate rooms, and the mediator, usually a retired judge, goes back and forth between the rooms and tries to settle the case. But our opening session didn't go as planned. About halfway through my statement, in which I acknowledged that there were leaks in the roof and that my client was willing to repair them, not his lawyer, but Roger Clemens himself interrupted my statement to say the house could never adequately be repaired. And then he stood up and he leaned over the table and suggested really the only way this matter could be resolved was if he and my client went out back and settled the case. Well, it turns out my client, also a proud man, didn't take kindly to this suggestion, which further incensed Clemens, and I'm thinking this is going to go down, and I'm going to be on the evening news tonight. But his wife stepped in, his attorney stepped in, the mediator stepped in, and they were all able to calm him down and keep him from coming over the table at us. Needless to say, the case did not settle that day. But for all his bluster, Roger Clemens did put his finger on the key issue that arises in almost every construction litigation case. And the question, it turns out, is the same question before all of us today as we continue in the book of Colossians with what we've been calling our blueprint series. And the question is this: to bring us into alignment with what's on the blueprint, do we require just a few little fixes, some small, easy cosmetic repairs? Or is what is needed a more comprehensive, system-wide rebuild, a total reframing of the whole structure? Well, to address this question, I want to focus on three words which all appear in two densely packed sentences within the scripture that Carol just read a few moments ago. We're in Colossians, and I'm going to focus on verses 14 and 15, if you'd like to read along. It goes like this. Over all these other virtues mentioned earlier in the text, put on love. Paul writes, love is what binds them all together in perfect unity, and let peace, he continues, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you were called to peace,
And then he adds at the end of verse 15 for good measure, and be thankful. Now, what I'd like for us to do is imagine, to picture in your mind's eye an inspection checklist with three boxes, and next to those boxes are the words love, peace, and thankfulness. And then let's ask of ourselves, do our lives really exhibit these three Christian virtues, these Christian concepts? But before we do, let me make this test, this inspection, a little bit more complicated. The question about love on this test, in this inspection, is not do we love those who love us, but do we love those who are difficult to love? You've heard it said, Jesus told his disciples, love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. The question on this test about thankfulness is not do we feel grateful when something terrific happens to us, but are we thankful all the time? The book of Thessalonians tells us, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. And the question about peace in this inspection is not can we carve out a moment of stillness every once in a while on a good day, but do we have the peace of Christ and through it access to spiritual stillness every day? Do we exhibit this sort of love, peace, and gratitude in our lives all the time? Well, if this is the test, if this is the way we put it, I don't think I pass. Do you? I'm afraid we're going to need more than just the little touch-up, the cosmetic fix. We're going to need the whole reframe. You may know that the word reframe or reframing isn't just a term in construction. It's a word used in psychology, in the counseling field as well. Reframing, any therapist will tell you, is a technique used with their client to help them see a different way of facing a challenging situation, to look at a problem from a different perspective. So with the rest of our time today, what I'd like to do is reframe the challenge of loving our enemies and the ones that are difficult to love so that we can really do this all the time. Then let's reframe the concept of thankfulness, of gratitude, so that we actually do feel it most of the time. And finally, let's reframe the notion of peace and stillness so that we really do have access to it in our lives each day. That's all to say, let's put in the work and use our imagination today to try to see if we can really read the blueprint and follow it. Follow the blueprint that God has set out for us to follow. Well, first, there's love. Let's look at that. How do we expand our feelings of love beyond just our families and our friends to all those we encounter each day? Extending, in fact, even to our enemies. This past Tuesday night, a local funeral home service contacted the church to ask if they could use our chapel for a couple of hours on Wednesday afternoon. A family who lived nearby had lost their 18-year-old daughter over the weekend, and they wanted to have a small gathering in a holy space nearby their home. So, of course, we obliged and made the chapel available. And I found out soon thereafter that the 18-year-old was a young girl who had been shot. She'd been murdered. And before the family arrived, I helped to load a plain wooden casket with the young woman's body inside of it onto a rolling metal bier that was going to be taken inside of our chapel. And as I lifted, as I received its weight, I felt a flash of pure hatred shoot through my heart and through my body for the person who did this to this young girl. Can I, can we, can God love such a person? Peter Attia is a doctor who studied at Stanford, and he volunteers regularly at a maximum security prison in Colorado. And it was there that, among a group of convicted murderers on death row, he first took part in an exercise called Step Across the Line, in which participants stepped forward every time they answered in the affirmative to one of the following questions. Here are the questions. Step forward if there were fewer than 5 books in your house as you grew up. Step forward if you're not from a 2-parent family. Step forward if you've had someone you love affected by alcoholism or drug abuse. Step forward if there's significant mental illness in your family. Step forward if you or someone close to you were abused as a child. Step forward if you or a close friend or family member has been sexually assaulted. Step forward if someone close to you died due to violence before they were 10 years old. Step forward if you've been a target of racist or homophobic violence. Step forward if you or someone close to you has attempted suicide. What became clear to Dr. Attia was the pure randomness that determines whether you're on one side of the line or the other. And in this simple game, among who we all consider the enemies of society, Dr. Attia began to see in distressingly clear relief that there was simply no daylight between the causes and conditions which placed them on one side of the line in a maximum security prison and him on the other side of the line at Stanford University. No one picks their genes. No one picks their parents. No one picks all of the influences that determine who they will be in this life. And therefore, not only should we be hesitant to claim credit for anything as our own, but because there's no 4-year-old who's really responsible for the adult that they've become, we must try to see, even in those who seem hardest to love, we must see them as broken children for whom we can feel compassion and hear God's voice telling us, love them as I have loved you. Let mercy and humility reframe how and whom you love. Gratitude. Sam Harris is a neuroscientist who speaks about many other things. He speaks about the importance of gratitude. And recently I heard him describe an evening that he spent with his family at home. And he said at dinner, he and his wife and his 2 children all seemed to be in a mediocre frame of mind. They were all in some way disgruntled or stressed out. And he suddenly realized how little joy they were taking in each other's company. And this is a dramatic reframe, but one that is powerful. He said, I began to think, what if I had died yesterday and was granted the opportunity to be back with my family? How much would I savor this moment? Yes, a mundane moment, but as it turns out, a sacred moment. Just sharing dinner with my family. And he said this reframing gave him instantaneous access to not just a new reality, but the actual reality that he was in which up to that moment that evening, he had totally taken for granted. Just think what it would be like to lose everything and then be restored to the moment you're in right now. I guarantee that there are at least a billion people on earth right now who'd consider their every prayer answered if they could just trade places with you or with me today. Call it what you want, fortune, luck, blessing, but the fact is you have another day to live on this earth. Enjoy it. And as Paul writes, whatever you do, do it in the name of Christ. Reframe gratitude. Well, let's talk about peace. Let's talk about stillness. The reason we have difficulty doing the imaginative work required to put ourselves in the place of another person, or in the reason that we fail to feel the gratitude of simply being alive each day, is that to accomplish the sort of reframing that we're talking about here only comes as a result of the sort of stillness that our lives are simply not set up to claim right now. We just can't do the deep thinking imaginative reframing requires between phone calls and texts and notifications and emails and updates. We can't do the patient work of inspecting and examining our hearts when we allow ourselves to be constantly bombarded by drama on social media and new crises every day on the news. And we can't do the precision rewiring of our minds when we're sleep deprived, overstimulated, and spiritually undernourished almost all of the time. So what do we do? What can we do? Well, as many kids who grew up in the 70s and 80s did, I watched the long-running children's show on PBS, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. But it wasn't until last week, reading a book called Stillness is the Key by Ryan Holiday, that I was pointed to something I must have seen hundreds of times, but which I had somehow missed the meaning and symbolism of. In the introduction sequence of the show, a toy trolley travels through a make-believe neighborhood, but then the camera cuts to an interior shot. And in the beat before Mr. Rogers appears and dons his cardigan sweater and sings his cheerful song about being a good neighbor, viewers see a traffic light blinking yellow. For more than 30 years, this Presbyterian minister of the gospel turned unlikely TV star that we knew as Fred Rogers was telling us, all of us, that these lessons of love and gratitude, of neighborliness and kindness require us all to slow down, to think deeply, and to be still. Well, this week, this month, this season, as we continue to explore this blueprint, let's also think of another color as well. As you drive or ride around town this week, this month, whenever you encounter a yellow traffic light at an intersection, not just out of respect for safety or the traffic laws of the state of Texas, but in terms of a spiritual practice, let it remind you to slow down. And at that moment, though your eyes are still on the road in front of you and on your busy life ahead of you, ask and keep asking for the reframe. How can the way I love become more graceful? And how can what's within my soul become more grateful?
When we are in doubt, we lose our way, and we don't know what's next. This little book of Colossians suggests we go back to the basic plans God sets out for us to follow, to the drawings God gives us to model, to the purposes for which God has designed us, Join us each week in worship as we return to this densely beautiful New Testament letter, which provides a reliable and durable blueprint for our lives.